Welcome to Moonbeaming, a podcast about magic, creativity, the tarot, lunar living, and more. I'm your host, Sarah Faith Gottesdiener, and I'm so happy you're here. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Moonbeaming, a podcast for the critical thinker, magical practitioner, and dreamer and creators of new worlds. I'm your host, Sarah Faith Gottesdiener. I am an artist, business owner, I'm a psychic tarot reader, and author of the Moon Book. I'm so glad you're here because we have such a special episode today for y'all. Today, we welcome Marika Clymer to Moonbeaming. Marika is a mother, traditional Japanese Reiki practitioner and educator, birth attendant, and village healer. She is also a contributor to the 2022 Many Moons Lunar Planner. My friends, the Lunar Planner is always such a special project to create from beginning to end. Y'all know I channel it. I am in deep connection with the energies of the year. There's always so much to take into account. And in terms of asking contributors, I will intuitively match up a writer, a practitioner that I ask to contribute to the project with a particular moon. And I asked Marika to contribute a ritual for working with the eclipse in Scorpio season for next year. Now, I didn't know her personally. I admired her a lot, but I didn't know her personally. And as these things happen, she accepted and replied right back that this was the perfect offering for her to contribute to because she's a Scorpio sun and she's always had a special relationship with eclipses and with Scorpio season. And what she offered up for us is so incredible. I was completely blown away. So I wanted to have an episode that honored eclipses in Scorpio season. And so this is what we're doing today. We, of course, have an eclipse in 1 week. And y'all know I want you to be prepared. I didn't want to spring it on you like the day of or the day before. I wanted y'all to have a little while to metabolize this conversation and all this information that Marika shares with us. And of course, in honor of eclipse season 2021, which is only going to be an intense portal. You know this. I know this. The goddess knows this. Everyone knows this. We can already feel it. I wanted to explore different interpretations of eclipses way out past the boring and played out, dusty, musty, no lotion takes. That eclipses are terrifying, that they're scary, which we all know, luckily by now, stems from a patriarchal framework. In my humble opinion, it's really tired when we replicate hierarchies, either-or thinking, binaries, and fear-based thinking when referring to the cosmos, the celestial, and huge energetic patterns and natural cycles that we are all a part of. And of course, that's what Marika's piece and Many Moons does. And that's what this conversation does. I want to be really clear. Eclipse energy is absolutely challenging energy. Absolutely. Of course. I'm not saying that it isn't, but I'm also saying that that which is challenging does not deserve to be demonized. Our shadows do not warrant avoidance, demonization, othering, shunning, because our shadows are part of us. Our shadows hold the gold. So it's a real metaphor for this conversation that we have today. We get into so much. We get into what it's like to be a Scorpio sun, why Marika uses the concept of metabolize instead of letting go or releasing when we're talking about pain and trauma with healing. Messages from autumn trees, what meditating with death can teach us, as well as what happens when we let the gods have their privacy, their space as part of our spiritual practice. This episode is positively infused with Scorpio energy. Y'all, we both were channeling it hard, and I know you will feel it in the best possible way. I hope it is grounding for you. I hope it is nourishing for you. And I hope it inspires you to collaborate with this upcoming eclipse season in ways that help you hold space for and integrate your grief, your shadows, as well as connects you to loving ancestors of all kinds. If you want to order the 2022 planner, in which Marika and dozens of other geniuses are contributors, we're shipping them right now. We're shipping them right now until December 20th. You can find the link in the show notes to order. Thank you so much to everyone who has already purchased one. We appreciate you and cannot wait to send you your copy or copies. And okay, now on to my incredible conversation with Marika Clymer. Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Moonbeaming. I am so excited for everyone to get a chance to spend some time with this week's very special guests. Today I have Marika Clymer. Marika, I'd love for you to introduce yourself to our listeners.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for having me. My name is Marika or Marika Clymer. I am a traditional healer of various lineages, currently residing on occupied Duwamish territory, also known as Seattle, Washington. And my work kind of spans the fluctuations and the beauty and intricacies of plant medicine work and ritual, ceremonial healing work, energy healing and ancestral goodness, all of those lovely things.
Yes, and I wanted to ask you about, I find that we're often, when we're doing such wide, expansive, complex, as you, I love the word intricate that you used, kind of work and engagement and collaboration, it often feels like there's both a kind of push from outside of ourselves to do so, as well as some very fundamental aspects of our own healing and reclamation that we also are undergoing, and that it's both intimate and reluctant and also much more expansive than us, almost mysterious in a way. And I was hoping if you wouldn't mind sharing if that has also been part of your experience coming to this existence, I guess. I was trying to think of the right word to describe it. I'd love to hear sort of where you're at with all of this now.
You know, I think for those of us who identify as healers, and this might be controversial to say, but, you know, we can't heal others if we don't heal ourselves, you know? And for me, that is an ongoing, constant process, of course. Professionally, I was in farming, in organic farming, for a really long time. That kind of coexisted at the same time as me not only deepening my spiritual practice, deepening my relationship with my ancestors, but also going through these processes of personal healing. And you're right, it is a combination of these external kind of forces that are happening as well as an internal process. Because when, you know, when my content began to be circulated throughout the wellness spiritual community in regards to Reiki, I really wasn't expecting that to be a thing. And it really felt like my ancestors were like, okay, you've done enough work. You will always have work to do, but you have done enough and you need to start sharing. And we are going to validate that for you by, you know, having a lot of people be exposed to what you're saying, but also at now at this point, you have a responsibility for us to follow this path, like fully, fully commit yourself to this path. Do not be spreading yourself, your energy around with, you know, the farming and other things that you're doing. Really commit yourself to us because, you know, it is our healing that you are also, you know, on this path of. And so, you know, I wouldn't say that that's necessarily fully outside of myself, but it is in the realm of the unseen that, you know, the spirits of the unseen that kind of brush away the leaves from our path for us and show us it so we can decide, you know, whether or not we're going to walk down that path. Yeah, for me, it's always changing and growing, and my ability to continue this work and continue to have meaningful things to say to contribute to the conversations is completely dependent on my own personal experiences and my commitment and dedication to the work.
Yes, I'm so glad you're sharing this. I also feel I want to kind of circle back on what you shared on, you know, you weren't expecting there to be so much interest in what you were talking about and what you're, I just want to like highlight for folks who aren't aware, and I'd love for you to share, obviously, because this is your work. Marika educates on the Western and colonial appropriation of, I'm going to mispronounce this, so please, of Reiki.
Yeah, so the proper like Japanese pronunciation would be Reiki, Reiki, but I just commonly refer to it as Reiki.
Reiki. And there's been, I think, I'm sure, both, as always happens when one shares the truth, a somewhat maybe hard truth that folks don't always want to engage with in an open way, I'm sure as much as there has been beautiful support and people who are so relieved and grateful to you, there has probably also been backlash or people who aren't very excited to hear about this because that would mean they would have to look at themselves. They'd probably have to change. They'd probably have to invest in more training. They'd probably have to maybe even put their practice on pause or not do it altogether. And what I wanted to ask you with this is because you said, oh, I didn't know, or you weren't like planning it, right? You weren't like, and then this will happen. We can't know. You know, do you think the healing that happened with that visibility and using your voice was also sort of part of your internal transformation or healing?
That is something that I continue to struggle with all the time. To be seen, to be heard, to be held, especially in the digital realm. I recently just came back from a really short break, but a very needed break from social media for about 2 weeks because I really needed to recalibrate like my nervous system and its relationship to social media, as well as, you know, how I am presenting myself in that space. I think, of course, with the, you know, we don't get to choose whose eyes see us necessarily. And that can feel very unsafe at times.
Especially because we don't get to choose how those eyes, like it's like a lot
especially I'm assuming you're very sensitive, psychic, like all of that, right?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, you know, for me, this concept of being seen cannot achieve any sort of balance or fulfillment without really strong boundaries around that, and getting to choose how I want to be seen and setting those intentions and very carefully placing those intentions within, you know, within my social media, whether it is, you know, subtle or not subtle, seen or unseen, those levels of kind of protections and stuff. Yeah, because I really, you know, I really do struggle with being seen, particularly as like a figure, an authority figure. I really would rather people see me as another community member, and only one representation of the Japanese experience or the Japanese American experience, though my, you know, peers have all, you know, resonated really well with what, you know, I have shared. And that is very meaningful to me coming from ancestral kin. Yeah, there's, I mean, it's so complicated and nuanced, especially when we bring in other practices from other places and other communities that are facing more urgent matters, more urgent circumstances that need our attention and necessitate our embodiment. And so the navigating how much to say and when it's appropriate for me to take up space, how much space to take up, all of that is deep consideration for me.
Yes, yes. And it's ever, ever changing. I love everything that you've shared. Also, like, it just reminds me that, yes, social media can be this incredible tool. It can be, especially for folks who are either isolated in a rural community or folks who are disabled and don't have the same access as other folks to community or connection, it can be incredible. And also, sometimes it can be a distraction from that outside work, making sure people are fed, making sure that even like your, I guess for me, even making sure that my own nervous system is being cared for, right? Because if we're on hypervigilance, we're not gonna be able to engage in an embodied, compassionate way. And I actually think this was a question I wanted to ask you down the line, but we're talking about it now. I wanted to have you share a bit in your, you wrote for the upcoming Many Moons Lunar Planner, you wrote a gorgeous piece for a lunar eclipse in November, and you talked about trauma. You share this idea that trauma isn't, or even the shadow, I suppose, or the unwanted parts of ourselves, isn't to be released, but it is to be metabolized. And I was hoping you could share more about that for our listeners, because I love that concept.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to take a moment to express my deepest gratitude and juicy love to my dear friend and colleague, Madison Neese. Their social media is @ritual_body, @ritualbody, and madisonneese.com. Just got a big shout out because I love her so much. Yeah, my understanding of this metabolization process was very much kind of planted in me through Madison and her work as a somatic therapist and drug and alcohol counselor. And I think also, you know, her understanding of it is also informed by other people's work, including Resma Menakem and Paul Levine, I think is his name. The Waking the Tiger. And for me, and I think as well for Madison, how we kind of have integrated this really physiological framework for viewing trauma within the body. For speaking for myself, wanting to draw parallels or create more channels and pathways for us to understand metabolization also as an ecological process, and how we can understand the body as an ecosystem, and what role does metabolization play in that ecosystem. And so, you know, the example that I used in The Many Moons talks about the trees and how when trees start to turn, their leaves start to turn, they turn from, you know, green to yellow to red to brown. Those colors are an expression of life energy, nutrients, cellular information that was in that leaf. And when fall and autumn comes, it begins to return that back into the tree itself, into the trunk, into the roots. And those leaves don't fall off the tree until that full process has taken place. Now, we can't really talk to trees and ask them what that process is like for them. You know, do they feel grief over that process? Is it painful? Does it bring up, you know, the storms that they experienced, or, you know, any diseases that they might have encountered over the last year, any, you know, disturbances in the ground even, you know? All of that information is returning and being processed back into the tree. And this process takes a few weeks, you know, as we see it in fall, how the leaves change color. And I feel like referring to the process of processing trauma as metabolization gives our body so much more credit for this healing process, for all of the work that it does in healing us. When we talk about, oh, I have this blockage or I need to release this, we begin to intellectualize our wounds and the trauma that we hold in our body. But ultimately, that work is not, you know, yes, it is cognitively done. There are certain amounts of trauma that we can, or experiences that we can process through talk therapy, through, you know, discussing things with our friends, but, or even, you know, through energy healing, but we need to be a little bit more deliberate about checking in with the body, you know, and asking the body what it needs for that process to happen. If we think about a gecko or a lizard shedding its skin, you know, we think about fall and the shedding of the skin and all of that, the releasing, the metabolization, the processing. You know, a gecko, when it's shedding its skin, and I only say this because my son has a gecko, and it's very, you know, it makes sense.
What's its name?
Its name is Flame.
Aww.
It was not, you know, not the most creative name, but
cute.
In order for that process to go to the most effective, you know, streamlined ability, this very natural, necessary process of shedding the skin, in order for that to go smoothly, the lizard needs to be in fairly controlled environment. You know, it needs to have access to food and water and shelter and not be super stressed out. And then that process goes really smoothly. If the lizard is stressed out, if its physical needs aren't being met, that process just really doesn't work. And oftentimes it can result in skin staying on different parts of the body, which can result in physical deformities and, you know, illnesses. And so when we're thinking about metabolizing trauma or difficult experiences, difficult emotions, not even necessarily trauma, just emotions held within the body, how are we giving them our attention, and how are we really allowing or giving our agency over to our body, saying that you are the guide in this process? And what is it that you need? You know, for those of us that bleed, when we're shedding the lining of our uterus and we're bleeding, we need rest and we need nourishment. And the same can be true for the body, only that might look different depending on what emotion is stuck or being held. It doesn't always look like talk therapy. It doesn't always look like energy healing. Sometimes it looks like dancing, you know, and movement, and actually the metabolic processes of the hormonal processes of release mm-hmm. and metabolization. And so how can we provide the conditions for our body to do that as well, to let that process go smoothly so that the skin doesn't shed in weird ways or get stuck on certain parts of the body and cause greater harm to ourselves or to others.
Yes, this also, as you were speaking and sharing about metabolizing, it also reminds me of this impulse to other, to push away something because it's painful or because we don't understand it or because we don't know that we have capacity or bandwidth, which is actually a real thing, right?
It's valid.
I'm always telling my students, be where you are. Like, we don't want to keep overriding the nervous system or the parts of ourselves that are saying, hey, this is too much, you know, or hey, I actually can't go there, right? But it also reminds me of metabolizing I love this trust, this self-trust of the body. I love this light illumination on process and not, oh, you know, let's take a pill. And I also like this highlighting of, again, it's like the way in which we can hold or the way in which we can make space. It's not we have to push this away. We have to get rid of this. Mm-hmm. Yes, in the process, you may lose shame. You may lose guilt. You may lose fear or doubt. But in that acceptance and in that availability to ourselves, we're like getting very intimate with all parts of ourselves that oftentimes we haven't been given the tools to be able to simply look at and just accept. And I think that it also reminds me of this idea I've been thinking about a lot. I have not been able to, I've been like Googling, you know, and you know, like, so this will happen to me a lot. I don't know if this happens to you. I'll think of something, like I'll just in my own thoughts, and then I'll talk about it and maybe even come up with a name for it just so I can talk about it.
Yeah.
But then I'll realize it exists. Like someone will tell me, oh, that exists already, like in psychology or in, you know, like I'm like, oh, well, like I'm not a psychology student, you know.
Yeah.
But it's something that's been sort of cropping up more and more for me in this Hierophant year. And we're headed into this Lover's year, which is going to be both more of the same and also potentially a difference. And it's this idea of even in how we communicate or even in our processes, we're always seeking, and I don't know whether it's inherent biologically or if it's been indoctrinated in us, but we're always seeking like resolution, like ending, even in the way we talk, we're trying to like maybe subconsciously get to a point, you know, or like wrap something up or share a commodifiable like aha mic drop or something like that, you know. And of course on the internet we have to like have this packaged little authoritative bow that gets the reader or the listener from there to there, like in like five paragraphs or five sentences. And I'm really trying to decouple not to use them, I'll use that term, or unravel from this attachment to these ideas of resolution or the end or the reconciliation, which I feel like the binary really depend on, like this linearity. And it also then, of course, creates separation, right? Like separation between us and us, separation between us and others. If I'm trying to like tell you what I know or tell you what you think or how you can get to wherever we're supposed to be getting to, I don't even know, between us and nature and God and source and spirit and the unseen, which I also think is a trauma response sometimes in a way. I feel like it has to do with really wanting safety, really wanting approval and belonging and to know, because so many of us have spent so much of our lives like in the unknown or not feeling like we have control or agency or autonomy, you know? But I think it ends up taking us away from the present in our body and does and creates this like separation, you know? And it also ends up keeping us separate from unseen support, like you were talking about with ancestral support or intuitive support or spirits or deities or nature or whatever. And I was hoping you could sort of talk and share about how in your life you've really been trying to unravel from the binary.
Totally. Yeah. Well, the binary is definitely everywhere. And there are many different binaries that I am seeking to, you know, create more fluidity between. But speaking kind of to more, you know, specifically to what you are talking about, I think we do exist, those of us who have been raised in the Western culture or, you know, Westernized culture, which is more than just us here in the United States and Europe or whatever, there is this inherent dichotomy between cyclical and linear time. And a huge part of my personal work, and I'm sure, as you know, with the many moons planner, you know, you are really trying to reinforce the cyclical nature of time and, or really, you know, not even of time, but just of energy, you know? And I think what a lot of people get hung up on, because we have all of this conditioning around accomplishment and chronological like growth, we deny the reality that healing is cyclical. It is, in the words of Lindsay Mack, spiraling, you know? And I feel like that also ties into our conversation about metabolization, because our body does not say, once we start drinking something, okay, I'm going to start metabolizing this now. And then two hours later, it says, okay, I'm done metabolizing this now. The body is in a constant state of flow and negotiation with what nutrients and, you know, input and energy is going in and what's going out. It is a constant process. And within, you know, within that cyclical in nature, just like the sun and the moon, you know, every single day coming, you know, waking up and having that cycle be born again. And for those of us that bleed, having that cycle renew every single month. When we become attached to where we're going, or the concept of being healed, which I also think is rooted in like Western ideology, because when you go to quote unquote heaven, you are going to be healed. You know, it's this destination. They've created this destination out of, you know, healing the body and being, you know, content with life as this thing that we will experience when we die, and that will be absolute and certain. And we become internally very attached to that idea. And I think that that causes a certain amount of disassociation from the lived reality of the body, the lived reality of nature and its cycles. And it can be very almost dysregulating for us to think that our healing work is never done. And how can we come to a place of just constant relation, constant ceremony? Something that really helped me was one of my students, their name is Sarah, in establishing our community agreements. They were like, I need space and permission to not be safe. And that was really validating for me, because I think even in like these trauma-informed spaces, we're constantly chasing safety. We're constantly chasing having our nervous systems be at complete equilibrium and, you know, regulation. And anything that diverges from that, we consider unsafe, or, you know, we're afraid of it. We're afraid of what's going to happen. And there are reasons for that, you know, especially for folks who do hold a lot of trauma in their body. But it also creates this false dichotomy or this false destination of, you know, oh, I'm not healed. If I'm feeling unsafe right now, I'm not healed. And that's a very, you know, in my opinion, a very harmful and invalidating thought. When I allowed myself the permission to not feel safe, I am increasing my ability to be in relationship and in communication with my body in a way that doesn't seek to invalidate it, in a way that doesn't seek to say, oh, you're not feeling safe right now, let me do XYZ self-care practices and then you'll feel safe. Oh, I still don't feel safe, there must be something wrong with me. And it's like, no, there's nothing wrong with you. This is a process. It's a process just like the leaves turning, you know, on the tree. I think with trauma, it just so happens that different leaves turn at different times. We can't just have this complete, you know, because we're not a tree, you know, we don't have the same physiological processes as a tree. With the rhythm of, you know, the moon or the rhythm of the season, have all of our foliage turn at exactly the same time. And ultimately, that's not what we're after. You know, we're after, we want to hold the complexity. We want to identify the leaves that are beginning to die, that are maybe sick or causing us harm, and then, you know, giving that leaf our attention and allowing that leaf to slowly fold and metabolize back into the body, you know, and that process is ongoing. If anything, I think, you know, I just want to emphasize how important it is for us to not see healing or being healed as this destination.
I'm really, really glad you shared that, because that's actually, I have for many years, I had almost like a mild allergic reaction to the word like healing, healed, healer. And it was because of what you were saying. It was this like pressure almost to heal. And what does that even look like? And how can you even heal in such an unwell society, you know? But what we can do is we can, as you said, hold space, learn how to be with ourselves with compassion and softness and sweetness and honesty, and see whatever is coming up, whether it's our shadow or we're activated or it's past trauma or a past memory, whatever it is. If we can change the way we, going back to what we said with metabolizing and not separating, if we can change the way we interact with that scared part of ourselves or that tight part or that really unsafe feeling, you know, part of ourselves, if we can learn how to metabolize it in the moment, that underscores just a larger trust with ourselves, you know, so that we can move forward in moments of difficulty, because it is true, there is no such thing as a so-called safe space, or I know folks say safer space and brave space and all of these terminology. And I think it also just speaks really sweetly though to folks' need to want to feel like it's okay to be seen or accepted or have a refuge,
right,
at least for an hour or for a day or whatever that is. And I think it does come back so much to the body and to being able to be in our body. You know, when you were talking about traditional Christianity and you were like, you know, you'll be okay when you go to heaven. My thought was, wow, it's like the ultimate disassociation. You know, yeah, it's like disassociate your whole life, do what we tell you to do. And for sure, even though we have like no proof, you'll go to this, you know, utopic land instead of like enjoying the utopia that sort of is nature, you know? But yeah, I'm really, really glad you brought that up. Let's stay in the shadows of many moons. Let's stay in the shadows of autumn, you know, cause we're here now. And I was very excited and very relieved to receive your absolutely beautiful piece and many moons, because it is about a lunar eclipse in Scorpio season. And can you remind me, is it that you're a Scorpio sun?
I am.
I love that, because sometimes it happens when I'll just reach out to folks and they'll be like, oh, you know, my moon is in Virgo, I'm so happy. Or, you know, and it feels very aligned. I was like, oh, this is great. I love that this all worked out. And, you know, because in my experience, the archetype of Scorpio and eclipses have been pretty misaligned, like they need to be metabolized, I feel like, you know, or seen in a different way. And I was hoping you could share about maybe like your experiences of being a Scorpio sun that maybe isn't often shared about, and or I'd love to also hear your we'll get into your take on eclipses as well.
Sure. Yeah, what is it like being a Scorpio?
I'm married to one.
Really?
Yeah. And they're very, mine is, obviously there's many other stuff going on, but my beloved is just very solid, very trustworthy, very considered, does not speak without consciousness, does not share without consciousness and metabolizing, is completely available to hold space. He's a ICU nurse at a respiratory hospital, so he deals with life and death and holding space for people who are like in the liminal, very there for. I have a lot of chronic illness, and he's seen me through a lot of, I'll just share, do you mind if I share a personal share?
Of course.
We had like just started dating, we're like 2 months in. And I got into a very serious car accident that left me like bedridden. I couldn't walk for a few weeks. It was very bad. And we were dating, and I didn't have any other, like, he was sort of my main person where I was, especially when you're that vulnerable, you know, like you literally cannot leave your bed. And he was just so kind, and he would like, I couldn't even put my underwear on. It was that bad. Yeah. And he like came and like put my underwear on and was like so chill. And I was just like, oh, this person can truly see me at my so-called worst. You know, it's like, like it wasn't, I just was completely unable to be mobile. Right. And I just was like, wow, this person just had like just the patience and the availability to hold this space is, I think, not talked enough about with this archetype, at least in my experience. But I'd love to hear your thoughts, seeing as you are one.
Totally. I mean, I think I'll just presence and be very honest. I recently was diagnosed with ADHD as well as like sensory processing disorder. And I started medication about a week ago, and a lot of the things that I would have kind of attributed to my Scorpio personality are really just the neurodivergency that I'm kind of no longer living with because of the medication. And so I'm in a very different place with my Scorpio-ness, because something that I would, when I think about something that makes me, you know, think about part of my Scorpio energy or the intensity of it for me personally has been this, like a lot of so much constant growth and desire for growth and always seeking to be of the most integrity, of the most discernment, which can be a beautiful thing when led by the heart, but can also be a very dangerous shadow when led by the ego. And so when I think about the times where my Scorpio-ness, quote unquote, or the things that I might attribute to my Scorpio-ness were really intense, I would say that what was challenging about that, or what can be challenging about being a Scorpio, is that you are in constant relationship ceremony with death. There can be a, you know, if there is resistance to that, there can be a lot of anxiety around that. And the reason why I kind of brought it up earlier, or brought up the ADHD, ADD stuff earlier, is because now that I've started medication, I'm not constantly chasing this fear of death in my everyday life. I realize that so much of my anxiousness, my overwhelm, associated with literally every little thing, from waking up in the morning to getting my son ready for school, all of those things were this like looking or chasing equilibrium or chasing a state of equanimity, or just like, okay, you know, which can be that anxiousness comes up when I'm resistant to change.
Which also could be death.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that that is something that when us Scorpios are balanced and in our power and very fully embodied, we are the arbiters of that change. We are the space holders for that change. We can really be like really deep in the waters of change. But if we're not balanced, if we are, you know, in varying levels of embodiment, disembodiment, that change can be a great source of suffering and anxiety. And I would say that, you know, it's not just the medication, but it's also like the amount of healing that I've done over the last couple of years. When I think about when I was most out of balance as a Scorpio, I think of like 3 summers ago or so, where I decided to quit caffeine because my anxiety and like my panic attacks were just so bad and recurring, and everything felt like a stressor. Yeah, so it's like, it's different, and I'm still learning what it means to be a Scorpio now that I am coming to just more embodiment, deeper healing, you know, all of that stuff. You know, what does it mean for me? But I will say that, you know, everything that you said about Scorpio, about your Scorpio, I would say it's very true. You know, we are incredibly dedicated, very loyal. You know, when I make a friend, I keep a friend and will go to very great lengths to express my care and my love for that person. Very great lengths, often to the point of like self-denial. Like I'd much rather make somebody else feel special and good than myself. Something else that makes me feel very Scorpio is, in Eastern Washington, where I lived for 7 years, It's like right on the foothills, or there's this valley called the Kittitas Valley, and Ellensburg sits right in it. It's a very small, relatively small town. And the Cascades are always just within view. And what I love about October in Ellensburg and the beginning of Scorpio season is everything is so quiet except for the wind, that it's almost as if, because there's less life and less green, you know, greenery and foliage, everything's essence, everything's spirit becomes so much more condensed and like intense or clarified. And I think that that's a really great way to talk about Scorpio energy. And that's why it can be uncomfortable for folks, because, you know, especially for, you know, the earth signs or the air signs, speaking for myself as like a Gemini moon and a Gemini rising, like the thought of not having any flowers on my tree is, can be very scary at times. But what I came to realize about the fall and the winter is that, you know, there isn't as much sun, it's colder. Everything needs to return to its roots. And also spirit is so much more present, because spirit is what carries everything through the winter. Everything is carried through winter by spirit. And that to me is what it feels like to be Scorpio, is to constantly be in that process of like, what is being shed and released here? Where are my roots? What are my branches? And how can I become more close to spirit, more close to myself? Not even necessarily to get through the winter, but just in general, you know, that kind of alchemy is very Scorpio.
I love everything you shared so much. I love this idea of death as being clarifying. Death as like when things become more still, or when the, I love like you had like, we want a lot of flowers on the tree, when the flowers have fallen, or the leaves or the decoration, and we're left with the structure, we're left with the roots, we're left with the stillness, you know. And it's, as you were speaking, it's interesting, I was thinking a lot about how I had I've had a series of like near-death experiences in my life, and I also like in car accidents, and I also got diagnosed, I also have ADHD, later diagnosis as well, which is its whole other conversation we won't have right now. But which is also in a way though, a death or a rebirth, right? And it's also a, like, it's kind of like a loss of an illusion, because you're like, oh, I thought I was just this way, or, oh, you know, and there's, again, there's a lot of material there. I got diagnosed with a very serious illness that I live with, like a chronic illness. And I went through a death, like, you know, having a doctor tell you you might die anytime is pretty clarifying, right? And after going through like a very long time, probably 6 months at least, of really intense grief, like grieving myself or grieving life or even grieving the, I think this is a very, this might be a tie into ADHD, grieving the diagnosis, because you're like, oh, this is clarification that yes, something was happening. Like, I think a lot of people who get late stage diagnoses or like with ADHD are like, I always kind of knew something. I knew I wasn't quite like, you know, the other kids in the class or the other people at my job or members of my family even, like, and then you get this, at least for me, I will only speak for myself, getting this diagnosis is so awesome. And also there's this grief where you're like, I wish I had known, like, had I known about this 20 years ago, how would my life be different? How much shame and alienation would have dissolved by now, you know? But again, I was thinking about after I went through this period of grief, grieving my body, grieving my life, grieving the diagnoses, all of these things, and I'm fine. I just want to be really clear. Like, I'm good right now. I actually had this very similar to like ecstatic rebirth kind of, where I was able to sort of see life, see what was really important, feel joyful in a way maybe I hadn't in a while. And this is just a really great reminder for me, because what happened when it kind of waned and it's sort of you're back to kind of life, as you know, with as errands and all of the things, you know, I started to institute a death meditation pretty regularly, where I would, you know, think of, okay, like, you're dead now, you're looking back on your life, or you're in the nothingness, no thingness, or what are you most proud of, or how do you most want to heal or grow, or what is your legacy in this lifetime, and so on and so forth. And I think it's like, we're going to be airing this in Scorpio season around eclipse season. You wrote about an eclipse. And so I was hoping you could just leave us with some of your thoughts as lunar eclipses as being a portal. In your piece, you write, "When I think of a lunar eclipse, I envision a person standing amidst parted seas, the moon illuminating their path." And I was hoping maybe you could share a bit about your interpretations and experience with eclipses and how you think of them as being portals.
I feel like for my contribution, I did a lot of channeling for that. And for me, on a personal level, a lot of what comes up in my body around eclipse season is oftentimes, you know, people, they talk a lot about like doing ritual and like making it a big kind of ceremony around eclipse season. And I've never really felt that way. I do think it's important that, you know, we reflect and use that space. But as far as like doing magic or casting spells or doing big, big healing work, you know, we're not meant to be putting ourselves out there. And within like the eclipses that I have experienced in my life, like eclipses that I've actually seen, you know, a lot of people like to go, you know, hunting for the eclipse. And a few years ago, we were like kind of near that line of the totality, you know, pathway or whatever. And in Oregon and Washington. And I just remember hearing about the thousands and thousands of people that were going to these big fields to watch the eclipse. And in my body, I was like, no. The eclipse is not a time to go be around a bunch of other people. It is time to be inside. I know that a lot of traditional cultures around the world have various stories about deliberately not looking at the eclipse. In a lot of ways, it is, I guess I'll kind of share this story, this short story, and then I will leave listeners with what, you know, I think about this eclipse and practices, you know, and how to kind of relate to them. But when I was really little, we were at the ocean, and I was probably like 3 or so, and I was playing in the water and doing all of that stuff. And looking out at the water, I just immediately, something kind of clicked. And it was like the joy and excitement gave way to the slowing of my blood and the slowing of my breathing. And I was really consumed by what I was seeing, which was, you know, the water being very still and the clouds just kind of slowly inching over them. And I turned to my mother and I was like, oh, you know, there's a storm that's going to happen. We should go. But now when I channel that time, I realize, oh, the gods are going to enter ceremony. we're not pure enough to be here for that. You know, we need to leave and give the gods their privacy. And I feel the very same way about the eclipse period, that, you know, it is a literal cosmological ceremony that is happening, you know, that we are not necessarily invited to, and nor are we necessarily pure enough to really to witness that with our own eyes. And within that, there is a humbling, and there is this ability to go inside and pray. You know, it's like, yes, these seas are parting for a moment in time, or a few moments in time. And the reason why they're parting is because the gods are dancing, or they're fighting, or they are in this big ceremony. And so how can we honor them with our prayers and with this silence and with this reverence? You know, reverence in an animistic point of view is just as much about gratitude as it is about like respect out of fear. And how can we instill that reverence into this sacred pause for whatever it is that we believe in, for creator, for spirit, for the planet, for earth? And how can we use that pause and this beautiful window of time, the few days before and the few days after, to sit in that parting of the seas, especially during the time of Scorpio season? How can we shed and, you know, participate or witness change and death as a clarifying agent, as a spirit within itself that allows us to come into greater embodiment, in greater just spiritual presence and spiritual essence? Because while we might not be pure enough to witness the ceremony of the gods that is the eclipse with our own eyes, we can engage in practices that make our hearts pure and our spirits more clean. You know, that we can use that time for that purpose and returning to those roots. So that's kind of how I guess I feel about it.
That is so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. As you were speaking, I thought about, what if we thought of a lunar eclipse as the moon metabolizing her shadow or her trauma or her parts that are ready to be transformed? And what if we gave her, them, him space? And then it also made me think of this really interesting idea, or the tie-in of you like giving the gods, giving the luminaries space as respect, and not like using them in this like capitalistic, like, I gotta do this for this,
extract this energy and be in this ritual.
And how like it goes back to us kind of always grappling and having an issue with this real need, this very sweet and innocent need to belong, to want the safe space, to not want a space that is out of the ordinary, which is why I think some folks can be scared of eclipses, where it's like, this happens once in a while, but not, and within it, it's unpredictable. And we want to know what's going to happen. We want to know what the moon's going to look like. We want to know what to expect. And I really, really love everything you brought up. It's going to be a beautiful offering to our listeners and really inspiring. And I know I'll be meditating on it for quite a while. I wanted to just thank you so much for sharing so much of yourself and for being here with your presence and your compassion and your intellect and your ethics and your integrity folks can absolutely be able to find Marika in the show notes. But Marika, I'd love for you to share, where can folks find you, connect with you, share a little bit about what you'll have coming up in like December, maybe into the new year. I'd love to just hear it before we leave.
Yes, thank you so much, Sarah. I just wanted to end by thanking you and thanking all of the listeners for their presence in this space. I want to thank my Ainu ancestors, my Japanese ancestors, my European ancestors, as well as my non-human ancestors that I called upon to be present with me today, the spirit of the bear, the spirit of the salmon, the spirit of the eagle, and the spirit of the snake. Thank you all for your presence and for your wisdom. For me, folks can find me on social media, primarily on Instagram at Moonhouse Northwest, which is Moonhouse NW, as well as my website, which is the same, Moonhouse NW. You know, I don't have too much going on. I'm very focused on my students and just cultivating our space together. But I am really excited to be launching a Patreon, which will be happening. It's currently up and it's live, but I haven't announced it yet. I'm sure it will be announced by the time that this goes, that this is published. And it's called the Hara Circle. And it is a community that is really centered around practice. In one of my, you know, one of the reasons, or in one of my attempts to divest from social media, I really want to invest my time and my content and my work into folks who not only want to invest in me, but are really dedicated to their personal or communal energy work practice. And so it's a very accessible space. All tiers on the Hara Circle have access to weekly community practice where we get together and engage in practice, energy cultivation practice. And of course, there are other offerings, but folks can join for as little as $5 a month because I really want to make energy healing on a personal level as accessible as possible, and also help folks build the skills that they need to actually do energy healing and not just take a weekend workshop to do that.
We didn't even go there. You gotta come back on, because we didn't even go. We're ready to, like, I was like, we were gonna, but yes, but we just went where spirit wanted us to go, you know. But yes, you are, if you don't mind, I would love to have you back to talk more about this.
I would love to do that. Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. So yeah, so folks will be able to, we'll put this all in the show notes. And sorry to interrupt you. I apologize. I just was like, as you said, that was like, we didn't even get into the weekend workshop. next time. It was just such a pleasure, and I'm wishing you all the best, and we'll connect soon.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Goodbye, everyone.
Okay. Wow. Wasn't it amazing? There was so much. I really feel like it's worth another listen or two. I get messages from folks that they listen to these episodes at least twice. And this was definitely one to integrate maybe a couple of times, you know, maybe you revisit it a couple of weeks from now. And that's what we've got for this week. If you liked this interview, if you're curious about Marika's work, give her a follow, support her work. All the links, as always, are in the show notes. And please rate and review this podcast. It helps us be found. It makes us all feel supported. If you are a Patreon supporter, thank you. You are keeping this podcast going. Thank you for your support. We love you. We love you. We love you. I'm sending everyone so much love. Bye for now. Okay, my dears, that is our show for the week. I really hope you enjoyed our conversation. There's so many nuggets, so many takeaways. She's so generous. Sign up for House Witches newsletter, follow them on social, and if you want us to have her back, let us know. Have a beautiful day, and I will be back very soon. Bye for now. Moonbeaming is brought to you by The Moon Studio. We are created and hosted by Sarah Faith Gottesdiener. Editing is by Caitlin George Parker. And the sound is by Will Owen. Thank you for your support.
Witches in the autumn leaves, collecting things for jars. Witches whisper to the night, there's a witch where